The Ministry of Culture smelled of damp wool and panic, a scent that clung to the back of the throat like copper. Vera stood in the corridor on the fourth floor, her portfolio pressed against her ribs, listening to the muffled voices spilling from room 412. Her room. The door was ajar, just as it had been when she left that morning, but the silence inside was different. It was the silence of a room that had been touched by strangers, rearranged by hands that did not belong to her. She pushed the door open. The typewriter was still there, covered in a fine layer of gray dust that hadn't been there yesterday. The potted plant in the corner, the one she had forgotten to water, the one that had turned brown and brittle over 3 months of neglect, had been knocked over. The soil was spilled across the linoleum, dark and wet, pooling around the legs of her desk. "Sit down, Vera." The voice came from the window. Colonel Hansel stood with his back to her, looking out at the gray sprawl of Prague, his hands clasped behind his back in the posture of a man admiring a painting. He wore a dark suit, immaculate, the wool catching the weak November light. He looked nothing like the soldiers in greatcoats who patrolled the entrance, nothing like the rough-handed men who had dragged Jiří Dvořák out of the Café Louvre 2 weeks ago. He looked like a professor. He looked like a friend. "You weren't expecting me," he said. He didn't turn around. "That's understandable. The schedule hasn't been distributed yet." Vera didn't sit. She kept her portfolio tight against her chest, feeling the hard edge of the suspension order she had picked up from the clerk an hour ago. Administrative leave. Pending review of Western associations. The words were bureaucratic, clean, harmless. They meant she would not be paid. They meant she would not come back to this desk. They meant she was already gone, and they hadn't even bothered to tell her in person. "I was told to wait at home," Vera said. Her voice sounded thin, swallowed by the high ceilings of the room. Hansel turned then. His face was smooth, unlined, the kind of face that suggested a man who never had to shout to be heard. His eyes were green, pale, and watery, like the river in winter. He smiled, and it didn't reach his eyes. It was a professional smile, the kind a dentist uses before explaining that a filling is necessary. "Home is a fragile concept," he said, "especially now, especially for people who have loose ends." He walked to her desk. He didn't touch the typewriter. He didn't touch the papers scattered across the surface translations of Czech poetry into French, French essays into Czech, the endless, meaningless loop of words that had been her life for 6 years. He picked up the potted plant instead, holding the dead thing in both hands, examining the brown leaves with genuine interest. "Your mother is a strong woman," he said. "Elena, she makes excellent dumplings. I had lunch with her last week." "In the kitchen," she insisted. Vera felt a cold spike drive through her stomach. "You went to our apartment." "I went to see your mother," Hansel corrected gently. "There is a difference. She is worried about you, Vera. She thinks you are working too hard. She thinks you are neglecting your health." He set the dead plant back down carefully so the spilled soil wouldn't spread further. "She told me you haven't been eating properly, that you skip meals, that you spend your nights staring out the window." Vera's hand went to her thumb, where the scab had cracked again, the skin raw and tender beneath the bandage. She hadn't noticed, or she had, and she had ignored it. "My mother confides in you," Vera said. "My mother confides in everyone," Hansel said. "It is a national trait. We are a nation of confessions. We confess to our priests, our doctors, our neighbors. We confess because we are afraid that if we don't, someone else will confess for us." He leaned against the desk, crossing his ankles. "And that is the problem, isn't it? The fear. The fear that someone else knows what you did, what you thought, what you translated. The fear that the paper trail is longer than you remember." "Jiří Dvořák," Hansel said. "He has contacts in New York. Editors who publish what we forbid. Men in London and Paris who print what the ministry forbids. Men who carry satchels. We are all under surveillance, Vera. It is not personal, it is administrative. The ministry needs to know who is loyal, who is useful, and who is expendable. You have been very useful. Your translations of the Western journals Goddard, Sartre, Camus, you have a gift for capturing the nuance, the irony, the bitterness. But lately your translations have become hesitant, you miss words, you change endings. You translate freedom as liberty and liberty as license. Do you know what license means in Czech, Vera?" "No," she said. "It means permission to do wrong," he said. "It means you have taken the law into your own hands. It means you think you are above the rules." He tapped the ash into her empty wastebasket, careful not to spill. Your mother thinks you are lonely. She thinks you need companionship. She thinks you are seeing someone. A man, perhaps, from the West. An American, maybe? Jiri Dvorak. Vera's breath caught. She forced it out slowly, evenly. Jiri is a journalist. He is a friend. Friends are dangerous things, Hansel said. Especially when they have contacts in New York, or London, or Paris. When they have editors who publish what we forbid, when they carry satchels. He said the word satchel casually, like he was discussing the weather. Like he was talking about a briefcase or an umbrella. But his eyes locked onto hers, and the green was suddenly very dark, very deep. He told her, "We found a satchel, Vera, under your floorboards, in the bedroom. The third board from the wall near the radiator. You said your mother didn't know about it. She is a simple woman. She cooks, she cleans, she worries." Vera's knees buckled. She sat down heavily on the edge of the desk, the wood groaning beneath her. The suspension order crinkled in her grip. "But you knew," Hansel continued. "You always know. That is why you are here. That is why we are having this conversation. I am not here to arrest you, Vera. Arrests are messy. They create martyrs. They create questions. I am here to offer you a choice. A tea, if you like. My mother used to make tea with dried apricots and honey. It was good tea, warm." He pushed off the desk and walked to the door. He paused in the threshold, looking back at her. The smoke from his cigarette curled around his head like a halo. "Your mother lied for me today," he said. "When I asked her if you had been home lately, she told me you were in Brno, visiting a sick aunt. She protected you. She risked her own safety to protect you. Do you know how rare that is? How precious? Most mothers would have handed you over on a silver platter. Most mothers would have said, 'Yes, my daughter is a traitor. Yes, she carries Western poison. Please take her.'" He smiled again, the professional smile. "Don't make your mother regret her kindness, Vera. Go home, sit with her. Drink tea, think about what it means to be useful. Think about what it means to be expendable. And think about the satchel. We can return it to you, or we can burn it. The choice is yours, but the paper? The paper is heavier than lead, Vera, and you are so tired." He left, the door clicked shut behind him, soft as a breath. Vera perched on the desk's edge, letting the silence thicken until it pressed against her eardrums. Above the dusty typewriter, dust motes danced in the slanted light, while the soil from the overturned pot had already hardened into gray crusts along the linoleum seams. A wisp of cigarette smoke rose from the ashtray, twisting slowly in the still, humid air. She picked up the suspension order and read it again. Administrative leave. Pending review of Western associations. The words were clean. The words were safe. They were a lie. She stood up. Her legs felt like water, like glass, like something that might shatter if she put too much weight on it. She took the order from her hand and tore it in half, then in quarters, then into small, jagged pieces. She dropped them into the wastebasket on top of the cigarette ash. She walked out of the room. She didn't look back at the typewriter. She didn't look back at the dead plant. She walked down the corridor, past the other doors, past the clerk's desk, where the woman pretended not to watch her pass. She walked out of the ministry, into the gray light of the afternoon, into the fog that swallowed the streets of Prague like a mouth. The tram ride home was silent. The other passengers sat with their heads bowed, their faces hidden in scarves and collars, their eyes fixed on nothing. Vera stared out the window at the passing buildings, at the shuttered shops, at the soldiers standing on the corners with their rifles slung over their shoulders. Their stillness was absolute, a heavy, hollow thing that seemed to drain the noise from the carriage. There was no anger in their posture, no vigilance, only the flat, exhausted resignation of men who had accepted the apocalypse as a routine administrative duty. When she reached the old town, she walked the rest of the way. The streets were wet with November rain, the cobblestones slick and treacherous. She kept her head down, her hands in her pockets, her portfolio empty against her hip. She thought about the satchel. She thought about the third board from the wall near the radiator. She thought about the way Hansel had said satchel, so casually, so lightly, as if he were naming a pet. He knew everything. And he wasn't going to take it. Not yet. He was going to let her keep it. He was going to let her carry it. He was going to watch her, waiting for her to break, waiting for her to scream, waiting for her to make a mistake. The apartment building loomed ahead, dark and solid, the windows black and empty. Vera climbed the 3 flights of stairs, her footsteps echoing in the stairwell, loud as gunshots. She unlocked the door and stepped inside. The apartment smelled of wet ink and stale tobacco, of cabbage and boiled potatoes, of the kind of domestic comfort that felt like a trap. Elena stood in the kitchen, her back to the door, stirring a pot on the stove. The spoon clinked against the enamel, a sharp, rhythmic sound. "Elena," Vera said. Elena turned. Her face was pale, her eyes red-rimmed, her hands shaking. She dropped the spoon into the sink and rushed to Vera, pulling her into a hug that smelled of flour and fear. "You're home," Elena said. "You're home, I thought. I thought they had you, I thought." "I'm home," Vera said. She held her mother tight, feeling the bones of her ribs beneath the wool sweater, feeling the rapid flutter of her heart. "I'm home." "He came," Elena whispered. "The Colonel, he was here this morning. He drank tea. He ate my dumplings. He asked me about you. He asked me about your work. He asked me about Jiri." Vera pulled back. "What did you tell him?" "I told him you were in Brno," Elena said. Her voice was steady now, hard, the voice of a woman who had made a choice and was sticking to it. "I told him you were visiting a sick aunt. I told him I hadn't seen you in 2 days. I told him." She hesitated. She looked at Vera, her blue eyes wide and desperate. "I told him I didn't know where you were. I told him I didn't know what you were doing. I told him everything he wanted to hear, except the truth." Vera nodded. She didn't know what to say. She couldn't bring herself to tell her mother that the colonel already knew that he had been under the floorboards, that he had found the satchel. "He was polite," Elena said. "He was so polite. He drank my tea. He praised my cooking. He asked me if I was cold. He asked me if I needed anything. He said he was just a neighbor. He said he was just checking on us." She laughed, a brittle, broken sound. "He's not a neighbor, Vera. He's a wolf. He's a wolf in a suit, and he's eating us alive." Vera walked to the kitchen sink. She turned on the tap, let the cold water run over her hands, washed away the dust from the ministry, the ash from the wastebasket, the memory of Hansel's smile. She dried her hands on a towel that smelled of detergent and old cotton. "We need to burn it," Vera said. Elena froze. "Burn what?" "The satchel," Vera said. "Under the floorboards, we need to burn it, all of it, before he decides he doesn't want to return it." Elena's face went white. "No," she said. "No, Vera, you can't burn it. It's important. It's the truth. It's paper," Vera said. "It's just paper, and paper burns." "Not this paper," Elena said. Her voice was rising, cracking. "Not this paper. This is your life, Vera. This is your work. This is everything you've ever done. You can't just burn it. You can't just give up." "I'm not giving up," Vera said. "I'm surviving." Elena looked at her, really looked at her, for the first time in weeks. She saw the darkness in Vera's eyes, the exhaustion, the fear. She saw the woman who had spent 6 years translating words that didn't matter, who had spent 6 years hiding in the basement of the ministry, who had spent 6 years pretending that language could protect her. "He's playing with you," Elena said. "He's playing with both of us. He's waiting for you to make a mistake. He's waiting for you to slip up. He's waiting for you to say something stupid, something careless, something that gives him the reason he needs." Vera closed her eyes. She leaned against the sink, her hands gripping the edge until her knuckles turned white. "What do I do, Mama? What do I do?" Elena reached out, took Vera's hand, squeezed it tight. "You go to your room," she said. "You lie down, you rest, you don't think, you don't translate, you don't write, you don't speak, you wait, and I will handle the rest." Vera nodded. She let her mother lead her to the bedroom. She lay down on the bed, beneath the wool blanket, beneath the peeling wallpaper, beneath the floorboards where the satchel waited. She closed her eyes. She listened to the sound of her mother moving in the kitchen, the clink of dishes, the hum of a song, old and slow, the kind that sounded like morning even when the melody was bright. She lay there for a long time, staring at the ceiling, thinking about the satchel, thinking about the words inside it. Thinking about the men who had written them, the men who had risked their lives to hide them, the men who would never see them published. Thinking about Hansel and his green eyes and his polite smile and his offer of tea. Thinking about the choice he had given her. Burn it or keep it, survive or preserve. She couldn't tell which was worse. She couldn't tell which was right. She only knew that the paper was heavy and she was tired and the night was coming and there was nowhere left to hide. The radiator hissed. a sharp counterpoint to the sudden silence of the printer below, as the city settled into a heavy, watchful stillness. And beneath the floorboards in the dark, the satchel waited.